Blog Talk Radio. California.
That is right. California does know how to party, because ain't no party like a West Coast party, because a West Coast party don't stop. What's going on, everybody? This is, once again, Inside the Octagon, hosted by yours truly. I am Kalani Lua. Thank you guys for tuning in. If you guys are out there and you're listening, you want to call in with some opinions, thoughts, and questions, please do so at 718-506-1506. That is 718-506-1506. This is Inside the Octagon, brought to you by the Sports Crib Podcast, which you guys can listen to every Thursday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That is the Sports Crib Podcast Thursdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Well, here we are. I don't want to say I'm at a loss for words, because that's certainly not the case, but I'm looking at it and saying, okay, well, this past weekend we had UFC 209, which was really supposed to be on the high end of a mediocre card. You looked at it and said, got two title fights. We got two former K1 kickboxers in there, female scrap, some good prospects. Okay, it could be okay. We got one fight, which was arguably the greatest fight of that division's history that was supposed to happen. We have a rematch of a potential fight of the year last year happening. Okay, this should certainly be an interesting card nonetheless. The card itself was not that bad. UFC 209 was a decent card with some great finishes, but unfortunately, it was a card without a great finish. It started off bad when news broke on the day of the weigh-ins Friday that Khabib Nurmagomedov would not be fighting against Tony Ferguson in a co-main event for the UFC lightweight interim title. He had been rushed to hospital earlier that morning. We're still waiting on word to see exactly what was the problem with Khabib, but as of right now, he has put out a statement saying that his health is fine, he's doing good, and hey, we'll see what the UFC and Khabib does going forward. But that was the first really big gut check. In fact, that probably was on the same level of John Jones and Daniel Cormier 2 at UFC 200 being put off at the last minute. Probably was on the same level. It might have been just a little bit more hurtful due to the fact that at least at 200 we had the female title fight, the interim title fight with Aldo and Edgar, and you had the return of Brock Lesnar, and it was still UFC 200, historic event. Okay. Plus, we had already seen Jones defeat Daniel Cormier, so it was almost a matter of, are we going to see the same, or can DC actually do something different? We haven't seen Khabib and Ferguson face off yet. Well, we've seen them face off, but we haven't seen them fight. So that was the big gut. That was the big shot to the gut. The other big shot to the gut was, well, the main event. Tyrone Woodley, UFC welterweight champion, defending his title once again against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. The first fight last year at UFC 205 gave us a five-round war, a battle that went to a draw. And in that particular fight, you wouldn't have been upset if the decision went either way. A draw, okay, that's fair. But can we finally get a winner? This fight here between Woodley and Thompson went to another five-round decision. After 10 rounds of Woodley and Thompson facing each other, a lot of us are stuck with the question, who's really the better fighter? Now, we could say that Woodley is by a step or two, but that step or two is not much. It's not the same step or two that Usain Bolt has on the rest of the track and field It's not the same step that Michael Phelps has on the rest of the men in his swimming division. It's not that. It's not the same step that U.S. men's basketball has on the rest of the nation. It is literally a half a step, at best, probably. That is because for one reason or another, unbeknownst to us, these two who gave us a tremendous fight the first go around decided to say, hey, you know what? We had a war the first time. A war. How about this time, instead of a war, we give you a yawn? How about that? How about instead of going out there and trying to finish each other, how about we try to see who can outlast each other? Who's going to be the first one to make the first move? How about that, huh? You ever try to have a staring competition with somebody, see who blinks or looks away first? That's what this was. Who's going to blink or look away first? Within the first 10 minutes of their fight, that's two rounds, these fighters threw a combined total of 14 punches, seven apiece. The first round saw six significant strikes thrown. 5 minutes, six strikes. That is what, 1 point something strikes per minute? Really? Seriously, that's what we're here for? My theory is this. UFC 209's main event was lackluster due to the fact that the first time Woodley and Thompson faced each other, there was no pressure on them. UFC 205, historic first event in New York, Madison Square Garden. But the main event took all the headlines. Conor McGregor versus Eddie Alvarez. Every press conference, the weigh-ins, the countdowns, the embeddeds, it was all about those two. Conor McGregor chasing history, Eddie Alvarez looking to dethrone the Irishman. It was all those two. So the pressure for Woodley and Thompson wasn't that great. Sure, it was there. Thompson's first shot at a UFC title. Woodley's first title defense and is knocking out Robbie Lawler earlier in the year. So yes, there was pressure for both men to go out there and perform. But it was, the spotlight wasn't really on them. The pressure was nowhere close to what it was for UFC 209. And that's starting to become a trend, if you notice, that the co-main events of Conor McGregor cards tend to be pretty good. But then you go ahead and you say, when those same fighters on the Conor McGregor card step out on their own, they don't live up to what we saw previously. If I could go back, UFC 194. Oh, no, I'll go back even further. UFC 189. Conor McGregor checking on Chad Mendez. Co-main event, Robbie Lawler, Roy McDonald. One of the greatest fights of all time. From there, you had Robbie Lawler go on and defend his title. Still being exciting, but his fight with Carlos Condit, to me, was a very good fight, but I wouldn't necessarily call it fight of the year. Then he loses to Tyron Woodley later on. Roy McDonald loses to Stephen Thompson, and now is in Bellator waiting to make his debut against Paul Daly later this year. UFC 194, McGregor versus Aldo. Co-main event, Chris Weidman versus Luke Rockhold. Rockhold defeats him in a back-and-forth battle. Both men certainly weren't at their best. One had an injury, a staff infection. The other one suffered an illness or an injury going into it. And so they both kind of had their own things going into there that didn't allow them to be at their best. But they gave us a pretty good fight for three rounds. Rockhold wins, loses the title the next time out against Michael Bisping, has to postpone his fight against Jacare, and still waiting to come back and try to reclaim his spot at the top of the middleweight division. Weidman, on the other hand, suffered some injuries, had to sit out for a while. UFC 205, loses to Yoel Romero, third round knockout. Conor McGregor, UFC 196. Yeah, it was 196. Where he's taking on Nate Diaz the first time. Co-main event, Holly Holm, Miesha Tate. Pretty interesting fight. Both ladies, you know, it wasn't an all-out brawl war, but it certainly was entertaining. Holly Holm looked like she might be going to a decision victory, but then again, Miesha Tate did have a 10-8 round order, I believe in the second or third round. But anyways, in the fifth round, Tate needs a finish basically to make sure that she does win. She puts Holly Holm to sleep. Next time out to defend the title, she gets knocked out by Amanda Nunes, then is retired later on in the year by Raquel Pennington in UFC 205. Holly Holm, after that loss, loses to Valentina Shevchenko, then moves up in a title fight for the inaugural UFC Featherweight Championship against Jermaine Durandamy. She loses that one. Co-main event at UFC 202, McGregor Diaz 2. Anthony Johnson knocks out Glover Teixeira, 13 seconds. So not much of that one, but it was a fascinating knockout. Anthony Johnson waiting now to get his rematch against Daniel Cormier for the UFC Light Heavyweight Championship, which happens next month. Glover Teixeira, since that loss to Rumble, he got a victory at UFC 208 in an okay fight. Nothing great. But a tremendous knockout by Anthony Johnson, a tremendous submission by Miesha Tate, a very good back and forth by Luke Rockhold, and then an all-out war from Robbie Lawler. Four co-main events on a Conor McGregor card. Four terrific performances. Thompson Woodley gave us a terrific performance at UFC 205 as the co-main event to Conor McGregor. So all the pressure in those events were not on the co-main events. Even though they might have been for titles or for number one contendership, the pressure wasn't on them due to the fact that the Irishman took all the attention, the spotlight, all the pressure off of them with his antics, his work on the mic, the anticipation of what he's going to do at every press conference, the heated exchanges he would have with his opponents. So it almost allows you as a fighter to be relaxed, not go in there and overthink your strategy, not go in there and be too tentative against your opponent. And you could go in there and generally put on a better performance than usual. But now, when you don't have Conor McGregor as your main event, and you are the show of shows, you are the man that the people want to see, what happens? Stage is a little bit bigger. Lights are a little bit brighter. And well, are you going to show up and show out? Or are you going to shrink and not seize the moment? Woodley won. Congratulations. Right on. Kudos. That's what you're supposed to do. As a fighter, get the victory. But as a fighter, you also have to understand there is the entertainment value to your sport, to your matches. I've said here, and so as many other media pundits have said, if you don't care about your next fight, why should the fans? If you are not willing to give the fans something to be invested in, then how can you expect fans to get behind you? Woodley made it known beforehand going into this fight with Thompson. He felt that there was racism in the world of mixed martial arts. Gets a lot of it from the fans, a little bit of promos. He's a champion. He wasn't promoted well. You know, the embedded and the countdowns really highlighted Thompson in one light. If you look at the background music they were playing in the promos, everything was favoring Thompson. Woodley, fans do not like you. Not because you're black. Not because you're from Missouri. They don't like you because you're a boring fighter. I said it. Tyrone Woodley, a.k.a. Tyrone Boodley, is a boring fighter. I ask you this. Of course, if you're a Tyrone Woodley fan, of course you're going to feel differently. But as a mixed martial arts fan, I ask you this. outside of his first fight with Stephen Thompson and his knockout of Robbie Lawler, how many Tyrone Woodley performances can you really look at and say, that's a defining moment right there? Oh, that's a performance I always like going back to. That is something right there. That is how many? And the UFC, he's had 10 fights. 7-2-1. Not bad at all. Not bad at all. Losses to Jake Shields and Roy McDonald. Lackluster performances. But then you start looking and say, okay, who are the guys that you beat? How have you beaten them? And when you start looking at it, you start seeing a trend with Tyrone Woodley. You start seeing a trend and, okay, I see what you're doing. I see how it's played. He gets his first UFC victory via knockout over Jay Haran. Jay Haran, who is now 40, and they fought in 2013, which would have made him 36. And he finished his career. Jay hasn't fought since then. And he ended up finishing his career on a 1-3 record. Okay. A lackluster performance in a split decision loss to Jake Shields. But then he knocks out Josh Koscheck, which, let's be honest, by this point in his career, that was typical Koscheck. It was the third in a row for Koscheck, the third of which is now currently a 6-fight losing streak, a.k.a. Koscheck got Koscheck'd. He defeats Carlos Condit, but it was due to a knee injury. So can you really count that as a finish? I mean, it was a leg kick and it was a knee injury, but it wasn't like an Anderson Silva leg kick. It was just a leg kick, hit his knee wrong, and, you know, Condit, whether it was a kick or whether it was the way Condit planted his foot when he took a step back. Then, like I said, a lackluster performance against Roy McDonald. He knocks out Dong-Young Kim. Okay, but has Dong-Young Kim ever been considered one of the top guys in a division? I'm not trying to sit here and discredit Tyrone Woodley or Dong-Young Kim or any of these fighters. I'm just stating the facts here. Think about it. When you look at the welterweight division and you talk about how stacked it is Dong-Young Kim one of the names that comes up? If he is, he's certainly not in the top 5, 6, 7, 8. He's not. I mean, it just is what it is. A lackluster performance against Kevin Gastelum. Yeah, okay, cool. You know, it was a catchweight bout at 180 due to Gastelum missing weight again. It was a split decision victory. Now, the good thing is Woodley did decline taking the extra 20% that a fighter gets if his opponent misses weight. He said Gastelum needs it. Let the young man get it. He made a mistake. Kudos for him on that. Stand up showing right there. That was in January of 2015. Then he waits until July of 2016 to go after his title shot against Robbie Lawler. Now, within that year and a half of being gone, he was an analyst. He had been training. And really, fans kind of just, in a way, forgot about him. In a way, they kind of just said, okay, cool, but, all right. Then he goes in there and shocks everybody by knocking out Robbie Lawler in the first round. And everyone's just like, wow. Wow, he's got tremendous power. But by that point, he's 16-3. He makes his debut in the UFC in 2013. It took until the middle of 2016 for people to really say, whoa, Tyrone Woodley, this dude's legit. He's for real. 19 fights in his career before people really were starting to take notice. Then, like I said, Stephen Thompson goes to a draw in a fight where none of the pressure was on them to give us the performance that they did. And then in this one, he comes out. I said last week on the show, you know, with all the talk that he was giving about racism in the UFC and how he needs to be promoted better, he wants to go down as one of the greatest welterweight champs of all time. He feels he's already the greatest welterweight champ of all time. I think just based off skill level and what he's accomplished, okay. Not true, but okay. But when you say all that, when you want all that hype, when you want all the acceptance, when you want all the accolades that come with being a champion, you got to do two things. You got to win, but you also got to win in a way that makes people want to see you. Anderson Silva did not always give us great fights. You look at his matchups against Tyus Latis, Damian Maia, Patrick Corte. These were fights where we said, what the hell is going on, Anderson? You're better than this. Now, his fights against Latis and Maia, I don't know if it's because those fighters are Brazilian jiu-jitsu-based guys. If there was some type of in-country rivalry or dislike for one another, I don't know if it's, you know, he just would not want to engage in the ground game with either fighter to take them out of their element. And at the time, both fighters not being able to stand up with Anderson Silva, I'm not sure what caused it, but Anderson always gave us a lot of great performances as well. A lot. James Irvin, Rich Franklin, Chris Lieben, Vitor Belfort, Forrest Griffin, etc., etc., etc. So, okay. George St. Pierre, all of his fights may not have been entertaining for a lot of fans. But you know why fans kept coming back to see him even if the card wasn't quote-unquote stacked? You know, the whole idea that the ladies love him. Yeah, that's true. But fans in general wanted to see him because, one, they either wanted to see him lose, or two, they knew that he was a total complete package. He had everything. And outside of just fans complaining, just to complain, there's really not that many fights you can say from GSP that wasn't entertaining. I mean, he defeats Thiago Alves with a torn groin, with a pulled groin. He gives a world beatdown to John Fitch, nearly rips the arm of Dan Hardy off, breaks the orbital bone of Josh Koscheck with a jab, makes BJ Penn quit, goes to war with Carlos Condit, Nick Diaz standing and on the ground. It was in a war with Johnny Hendricks, which some people felt Hendricks won. Okay, not going to argue that, but there's not many fights you could point to say, well, look at this performance by GSP. That was whack. Was it? Think about it. Really, was it? But with Woodley, you can point to several performances where he's done that. Now, don't get me wrong. It takes two to tango. Stephen Thompson is to blame for this performance as well. Stephen Thompson was refusing to engage when he had Tyron Woodley backing up pretty much the entire fight. Outside of a takedown by Woodley in the third round and the end of the fifth round where Woodley nearly finished him, Woodley was retreating the whole time with his back close or up against the fence majority of the fight. Thompson, as I stated going into it, his game plan should have been to throw a lot of feints and then to come in. He threw a lot of feints. Threw too many feints, though. He threw way too many feints. So for Thompson, he kind of went with the game plan that I was suggesting, but he just didn't pull the trigger. For what reason, I have no idea. Because for Thompson, you take the champion to a draw the first time around. This is your chance to show that the draw wasn't a fluke, that you are one of the best fighters in this division. This is your chance to get your first UFC gold put around your waist. And the champion, instead of being aggressive and coming forward, he is backing up. Go after him. You're one of the most versatile strikers in MMA. You should have been going after him. So even though I am criticizing Tyron Woodley here, it's because he's the champion. He got the nod. But Stephen Thompson is also to blame for this as well. This was a horrible showing by both fighters. And honestly, if I'm the UFC, I know they won't do this, but I said this on the SiriusXM Channel 93 Rush post-fight show when I called in with Steve Cofield. I said Tyron Woodley's next fight should be the prelim fight pass match that you get for a show for his next outing, just to show their disdain for this performance. It won't happen, but, you know, another realm, another universe, fantasy island. That's what I would do. For Stephen Thompson, same thing. I give him an unranked opponent, and yeah, I don't even want to see you. I'm surprised that Dana White even went in there and put the belt on either fighter. Maybe he thought Wonderboy was going to get the nod, so he would have did that. But I'm surprised he didn't do what he did with Anderson Silva versus Damian Maia in Abu Dhabi, where he hands the gold over to Anderson Silva's manager and says, you give him the belt. I'm surprised Dana White didn't do that here. I don't know if the new owners, WMG, I don't know if they're like, yeah, we don't do that again, or if Dana just said that wasn't a good look, I shouldn't be doing that. Or, like I said, maybe he felt, hey, if Thompson get it, it's a brand new champion. Okay, cool. But this fight was so boring. And what's interesting is you get Tyrone Woodley saying, well, I like to see fans go in there and do better against Wonderboy. We're not fighters. We're paying customers. See, fighters have this cop-out that they always go to. Athletes got it, but you hear a lot of it from fighters. Well, I don't see you out there fighting. I don't see you out there doing any better. When you get a fight, you let me know. When you can do better, you let me know. First off, understand something, partner. We respect what you guys do as fighters because it's tremendous that you're willing to put your body and your health on the line and go in there and stand across from another human being and say, I'm better than you, and I'm going to show it with my fists, my elbows, my knees, my feet, my grappling skills, all that put together. I'm going to show it. That's amazing. But by that logic of fighters using, well, I don't see you doing it, by that logic, they're basically saying, if you don't do something, then you can't complain about it. So for fighters, you cannot go to a restaurant and complain about the food that you ordered because you're not a chef. You can't go to a restaurant and complain about how dirty it may be. You don't own a restaurant. You can't buy clothes and say you don't like how they fit on your body or the fabric or the colors or whatever it could be. You don't make clothes. You can't buy a pair of shoes and say you don't like how they feel and they're just not for you and or they're ugly. I don't like the design because you don't make shoes. You can't buy a car and say you don't like how it drives or how it handles or the size of it. It needs to be bigger or it needs to be smaller. I don't like the color, et cetera, et cetera. Because you don't make cars. So by that logic, that's basically what they're saying. If you don't do what you're complaining about, you can't complain about it. Bull crap. If you're a paying customer, you got the right to voice your pleasure or your displeasure. You get a rating, hey, I give this a 5-star rating or a 1-star rating. You have that right. Now, don't get me wrong, I understand there's a lot of ignorant fans out there who will attack these guys on a personal level. I get that. I'm not talking about those ignorant folks. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the ones who are clearly saying, that's not a good fight. That's not a good performance. I did not enjoy that. That is not what I paid for. This is what I paid for? Horrible. If I could, please give me my money back. Erase this from my memory. I could never unwatch this again. Those are the ones I'm talking about. And they have a fair point. They have a legit fair point to that. So for Tyrone Woodley, for Uriah Hall, for any fighters who wants to pull the, well, until fans have a fight of their own, or until they do it, I don't think you should be talking. Child, please, go kick rocks. Because that's not even logical. It's not. So it's unfortunate that we had to sit through this. Like I said, 10 minutes into the fight, two rounds, 14 strikes. Folks, is it just me? Is it just me? That's not good. That's not entertaining at all. Now, we'll give credit. Tyrone Woodley in the third round, as I said earlier, did get a takedown up against the fence, and he did a tremendous ground and pound on Stephen Thompson. He had Thompson on his back with his head and shoulders leaning against the fence. Woodley was on top of him and had one of Thompson's legs rocked up with his own. What Woodley does is he takes his right hand, puts it around the back of Thompson, and grabs Thompson's right hand, or right forearm, I should say. He takes his left hand and grabs that same right wrist. So now he's got the right arm around the back, grabbing the right forearm of Thompson, the left hand grabbing the right wrist of Thompson. Because his right arm is around the back and he's on top, he's trapped Thompson's left arm from moving, holding down his right arm. when he now is laying on top of him and leaning forward to apply more pressure to his upper body, he lets go of the wrist with his left hand and he's throwing punches to the face and to the body of Thompson. In this particular situation, Thompson is nearly helpless. He can't do much besides try to move his head on the other side of Woodley's head, because Woodley's head, you know, is pressed up against his chest or his chin. Best he could try to do is to try to move it from the side where the punches are coming to the other side, so his head is behind Woodley's head. And if Woodley was to throw a head punch, he's basically going to punch himself in the face or the back of Thompson's head, which is illegal. And that's when Thompson would go to the body. I mean, Woodley would go to the body. Excuse me. That was a great positioning. Why did it take three rounds to get there? In the first round of your first match, you took Wonderboy down easily and held him there for 4 minutes. Now, I understand that both of these fighters are generally described as counterpunchers. I get that. When you got two counterpunchers in there, it doesn't necessarily lead to always an exciting matchup because they're both looking for the other to engage and come at them and be aggressive, but that's not in their nature. You look at someone like a Chuck Liddell, he's a counter striker. Very rarely would he come forward. Now, if he hurts you, he's coming forward, but he likes to just wait for you to come on in and then I'm going to tag you. Well, if he's taking on another counterpuncher, guess what? You got two guys just circling each other. But in this particular matchup, as I said, with Woodley backing up most of the fight, Thompson should have been engaging more, throwing high kicks, throwing some jabs to the body. Now, Woodley did make a good point. Whenever he did try to rush in, because Woodley is like a frog, when he plants his legs, squats down, and he bull rushes forward, he is one of the quickest and strongest fighters in the cage. Tree trunk legs, tremendous athleticism, tremendous power in his right hand, an explosiveness that would make him a rival athlete at the NFL Combine, which just happened this past weekend. But when he would do that, Thompson would time it with a right check hook. Just pop, right there, pop. So Woodley said, okay, I don't want to come in and get caught in the temple, behind or right above the ear, your doula oblongata, knock your equilibrium off. I don't want to get caught on the chin. I don't like that. I don't want that. Fair enough. But it's almost like, well, if I can't rush in and if I can't press him up against the fence, I don't have any offense. And for Wonderboy, I understand you don't want to throw too many kicks because of the wrestling. Why not throw high kicks? Most of the time when you see wrestlers taking on someone who throws a kick and they take them down, most of the time it comes off a leg kick or a lackadaisical body kick. You don't see many wrestlers go in on a head kick. You do see some. I know someone listening out there is going to say, "Oh, this fighter." No. You see some. Nothing's 100%. But the percentages say not many wrestlers go in and take you down off of a high kick. So for Thompson, I'm surprised he didn't throw more high kicks, more jabs. I'm surprised that he didn't try to do, like I was suggesting, more so like Lyoto Machida does. Faint, rush in real quick, 1-2, back out. Faint, rush in, 1-2, back out. Faint, 1, back out. Constantly keep it a guessing game. Kind of like a yo-yo. What am I going to do? I'm going to walk the dog. I'm going to bring it right back. Go around the world. And all the other tricks that you can do with a yo-yo. Don't know them all. I apologize. But I'm very surprised that Thompson wasn't more engaging. When it was reading the scorecards, the first one was for Woodley 48-47, I believe. Then the next one was 47-47. And man, oh man. I don't think there's a person that was hearing that announcement that did not think, oh my God, do we have another draw? Then the last one went for Woodley. He gets the decision, which is weird because in the fifth round, on one of the judges' scorecard, he gave it a 10-8 for Woodley because Woodley, in the last 30 seconds, nearly got a finish. And that's the thing about Woodley. As I said, he's got tremendous power in his right hand. Nearly gets the knockout victory over Thompson, knocks him down, gets some ground shots on him. Thompson, you know, he balls up real quick and he gets back up, and then Woodley knocks him right back down, and then he goes at him again and nearly gets the finish. But gives it a 10-8 round. If he would have just gave that a normal 10-9 round for Woodley, that would have, by the cards, that would have given Wonderboy the match. It would have gave him 48-47. And we would have had a draw. Yeah. So as I said, after 10 rounds of fighting each other, who's really the better fighter? Don't know. The first time around where there was no pressure, their styles made for an excellent fight. This time, wasn't the case. So going forward, what does the UFC do with these two? Well, for the champion, Woodley, obviously he sits back and waits for a number one contender to emerge. Right now we have a fight in May between the number one contender, Damian Maia, taking on top five ranked opponent, Jorge Masvidal. That should be a very interesting fight. Damian Maia has been waiting a long time for a title shot. So if Damian Maia could pick up another victory, surely Woodley versus Maia could be in the works for later on this year, barring any injuries. Masvidal win with a victory over Donald Cerrone and Damian Maia, he certainly could earn himself a title shot. Robbie Lawler, the former champion who defended the belt a couple of times in extremely exciting fights, got the first round knockout to Tyrone Woodley in at the end of July last year, has not fought since. So maybe, but because he's been off for so long and he got knocked out in the first round with ease, maybe you don't put him right back in there. Maybe he comes back, has a fight against Donald Cerrone, which I know a lot of people would love to see. They were supposed to fight at UFC 205. Maybe you go that route. Okay, cool. That'd be awesome. Maybe we get Lawler Diaz 2, the rematch between those guys once again. That'd be fun. So he's got some options. Maybe a fight with Neil Magny. Okay. For Stephen Thompson, now this hurts. He's had two shots at the champion. Came up short both times. Close, but no cigar. So what do you do with him? Well, given the fact that he's had two straight title shots and came up short, you really don't want to put him in a matchup that's going to keep him very close to the top of a title contention. You want to clear the space up a little bit, allow other fighters to get a chance to move up. So for him, there's a fight with Gunnar Nelson and Alan Jourbain later on this year. That'd be a good fight for the winner to take on Stephen Thompson. Gunnar Nelson is ranked 9th in the welterweight division. That'll be a good matchup. If Nelson was to win it, that'll be a good matchup. You get a two top 10 guys. If Jourbain wins it, that'll be another really good matchup. Two strikers. I really would love to see that matchup. You can see him take on Tarek Saffredin, who lost to Dong Young Kim at the end of last year in December. So maybe they could go at it. Matt Brown, maybe. For Stephen Thompson, he's probably going to have to win. Let's just say this. If Woodley continues to be the champion, you know, defend it a couple times, Stephen Thompson's probably going to have to get 4 or 5 wins in a row before he could get another title shot. That's just being realistic. Now, if there's a new champion out there, then maybe it slims down just a little bit. But even so, Thompson's going to have to get some very exciting fights or exciting finishes to get his name close back in there. I don't think he'll be in title contention for the next year, year and a half, maybe even 2 years, maybe. So it's, that fight was, it was horrible. It reminded me of Ken Shamrock versus Dan Severn 2 back in the 90s when these guys basically stood across from each other for the whole fight, flinching at each other, but not doing anything. Maybe it wasn't as bad, but it reminded me of the fight being so bad. You know, oh, it was a technical chess match, the battle of wits and minds and game planning and strategy. Blah, 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 blah. Nobody want to see that crap. We didn't pay to see a chess match. And here's the thing. Here's the thing real quick as I wrap it up about the main event to talk about more MMA news. I'm not saying every fight needs to be a just bleed fight. Just bleed. You know, go out there, rock 'em, sock 'em, blood everywhere, you know, throwing caution, no caution at the wind, and just haymakers all the time. I'm not saying that at all. I enjoy a very good tactical fight. Hell, George St. Pierre was one of my favorite fighters to watch. How many Just Bleeds fights was he in? Not many. How many all-out wars did he have? Not many. I enjoyed watching Brock Lesnar fights. He wasn't in no wars. He wasn't in no bloodbaths. I enjoy watching good competition. And anybody listening out there, please get in touch with the show. Call in if you're listening live, 718-506-1506. Hit me up on Twitter, KLua11. And please let me know, if you like this fight, why? I'll gladly listen. But it's very hard to say, it'd be very hard to convince someone this was a good fight. Now, what was supposed to be a good fight was a co-main event. Khabib versus Ferguson. Oh, boy. This fight right here. This is the third time the UFC has tried to put this fight on. Third time it's fell through. As I said, Khabib was rushed to the hospital. He's put out a statement earlier today or late yesterday saying that his health is good. He's fine. And we'll see what his moves going forward will be. For Ferguson, okay, let me back up real quick. If you guys were watching the countdown and the embeddeds, especially the embeddeds, you can see in Thursday's press media day, when they did a face-off at the end, Tony Ferguson looked at Khabib and said, good luck with that weight cut. And if you watch the embeddeds, Khabib, he did look like he was struggling with his weight cut. When you saw him on the treadmill, even though he's jogging, and I'm not trying to read too much into this, okay? I'm not a witch doctor, but if you looked at him jogging on there, he didn't look right. It almost looked like he was struggling jogging. I don't know if it was an injury, if he had something going on with his insides, and maybe he just felt sick, dizziness, woozy. I'm not sure. Could his knee be acting up again? Possibly. Could it be too much weight that he was trying to cut and he was just fading away? Possibly. But he just looked like he was struggling just jogging. Tony Ferguson admitted earlier today on the Luke Thomas Show on Sirius XM Channel 93 Rush. What is it, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time? So 1 to 3 here on the West Coast. You guys can check that show out 5 days a week. Good show, by the way. But he admitted that he cut down from 195, 40 pounds. And he even admitted that, yeah, he had some problems with the weight cut. And it was tough. When it comes to the weight cutting, guys are always, there's no real answer on how to fix it. If you do same-day weigh-ins, you're still going to have guys pushing the limits, trying to get that extra edge. If you try to add more weight classes, you're still going to have guys trying to go further down than they should due to the fact that they want to be the bigger guy in the division because in some cases, it really does give you an edge. A lot of these guys who are wrestlers, they grew up from what, 4, 5, 6 years old all the way through high school, starving themselves, cutting weight. So to them, they're like, look, as long as I've been doing this, it's nothing new to me. But as we've seen over the years, as you get older, your body changes, it reacts differently, and you can only cut weight for so many years in your life. So for a lot of these guys, you say, why do you need to cut so much? In fact, I wouldn't mind if they added more weight classes. I've said this before on the show, 165 and a 175-pound class, and even a 195-pound class. Now, once you get past 205, I don't know if there really needs to be another class between light heavyweight and heavyweight just because the depth out there is not great. Got a lot of these guys in football and basketball and baseball. Not a lot of athletes left to go into the world of fighting at the higher weight classes. But in the lower ones, oh, there's plenty. And then you also figure maybe those classes aren't deep right now, but just imagine if you build it, they will come. And then you look at the fact of what UFC fighters can benefit from the added weight classes. What small middleweights can now say, I'm going to move down to 175 or what big welterweights can say, thankfully, I could add 5 extra pounds. Same thing for the lightweights and welterweights. Guys who are too big for welterweight or too small for welterweight or too big for lightweight, they're at 165, right there in the middle. And now guys are fighting closer to their weight. And maybe you take another step and say, we're going to weigh you in the off season when you're in shape, right? We're going to weigh you or out of shape, either way. But we're going to weigh you in the off season when you don't have a fight set, randomly, just like you saw it coming in. We're going to weigh you. If you weigh 195, you're not allowed to fight in any class that's 20 pounds away from when you're at now. So if you're 195, you're either fighting at middleweight or a welterweight. And I know welterweight is 25 pounds. I get that. But because that's the only class, that's it. You're not cutting down to lightweight. You're not doing it. Now, if you want to fight at lightweight, well, then you need to get in the 170, 175 pound range. And look, on this show, maybe I'll try to get some nutritionists, some bodybuilders, some personal trainers, people who are in that industry, and try to get their thoughts on that end of how much weight should one cut if they are to fight. Because it is a tremendous, tremendous deal on your body and your brain to be cutting that much weight. But yeah, with Khabib cutting as much weight as he did, I'm hearing that he was somewhere over 200 trying to cut weight. I'm hearing that he was kind of around what Tony was, around a 190, 195 range. I'm also hearing maybe it was an injury that he was suffering and he just couldn't cut weight. We've seen that before where fighters miss weight and we're like, what the hell? Then we find out they messed up their knee. They messed up their foot or their ankle, and they couldn't get the jogging, the conditioning in. They couldn't jog or do the bikes like they should, and they were just trying to cut weight. And when you try to go that route, it's bad juju. It's just not going to work out for you. So in this regard, I would say, yeah, it was very tough for Khabib. Whatever his health issues are, I'm hoping that he's healthy and he can come back, whether it's the fighting or not fighting maybe, and he could just continue to be healthy going forward. But with Tony Ferguson, he was offered Michael Johnson. They fought each other before where Johnson won. He was offered a fight with Michael Johnson. Johnson said he would step in on less than 24-hour notice. Here's the problem. Tony Ferguson turns it down, and everyone's like, what the hell, Tony? Why are you going to rob us that? Tony comes out and says, whoa, 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 whoa. Don't blame me, guys. The UFC offered me Michael Johnson, but they also offered me less money and no interim title. Now, what the hell? Seriously? UFC, how do you have a guy who did make weight in your co-main event in one of the biggest, most anticipated fights we all want to see get a brand new opponent on less than 24-hour notice? And you say, yeah, we're going to offer you less money. These fighters don't make a lot. And Ferguson is not in the same class of Ronda Rousey, Brock Lesnar, Jon Jones, Conor McGregor. He's not in the same class of, well, I've made millions fighting, so that's cool. But we're going to offer you less money. And, oh, yeah, you know the interim title you were fighting for? Yeah, that's no longer on the table. So if you lose, you'll lose to somebody who's ranked below you. You'll make less money. And your chances of getting a potential title shot next out the window. All because we wanted to be cheap. Why couldn't they do the same thing they did with Max Holloway versus Anthony Pettis? I understand Pettis was not a replacement. He was the original fighter. He just missed weight. I get that. But why not have the same stipulation that if Tony Ferguson wins, he gets the interim title. If he loses, no interim title. Why not? And why would you pay him less? When Jon Jones got taken off UFC 200 and Anderson Silva stepped in, Cormier still got his money. He still got paid. Now, granted, he was supposed to be the main event and he was a champion. Okay. But still in all, I went from being in the main event to now I'm in the third or fourth to last fight before the main event. Third or fourth fight before the main event in a 3-round battle, which, you know, was another boring fight. But come on, UFC, what? Come on, guys. I know you guys are trying to make your money back from the $4 billion investment or purchase of the UFC, but come on. You're really nickel and diming guys like that? So I don't blame Tony Ferguson for declining the fight. There was no upside to it other than maybe going out there, getting a performance or finish of the night bonus and adding, you know, something to his highlight reel and getting revenge on the fighter that beat him in the past. Okay, but yeah, that's not worth it. So from here, you got to wonder, what happens now? As I said, these three fighters, these two, we've tried to face off against each other 3 times. They faced off against each other plenty of times, just not in a cage. With Khabib, first off, we got to know what his health is. We got to know what's going on there. And in all honesty, you do got to kind of ask the question of, does Khabib maybe, just maybe, does he need to move up in weight? Now, Khabib has only missed weight one other time in his career. So it's not like it's something that he's not a habitual weight misser like Johnny Hendricks or Gaslam. But at 5'10", he's not, you know, he's tall enough to move up to welterweight. So I would say, why not? Why not? You know, if you're having troubles with weight cutting and if your knee is just not able to hold up to where you can do some hard running on the pavement or the treadmill and really go out there and get your cardio up, why not just say, this is number one bullshit. I go up to welterweight and I try to make a run there. We saw what it did for Cowboy Cerrone. Up until the Masvidal fight, it's been a complete turnaround for him. And even though he lost to Masvidal, he's still one of the top guys in the division. And I'm pretty sure he's going to get more success there than failures. And it's healthier for him because he's not cutting so much weight. So I would say, yeah, for Khabib, if he still wishes to fight and still wants to continue in this game of combat sports, maybe a move up to welterweight would be in order for him. Because of this, maybe you tell Tony Ferguson, you know what? You didn't fight. Oh, you're free in July. Hey, Connor, we know you're trying to do this Floyd Mayweather thing, but we kind of got an International Fight Week thing going on in July. I don't know if you know, but it's kind of a big deal. You know, you weren't on the one last year because we were kind of being, you know, a-holes to you by not being at the press conference. But come to find out with everything that happened, we kind of should have just let you miss that one and then come back anyways and make 200 bat as big as it, we were hoping it would have been. But you made 202, great, and 205, awesome, appreciate it. But still in all, how about you come back for International Fight Week in July and you take on Tony Ferguson? July in Las Vegas, it's hot, but it ain't August hot. So, yeah, come on, Ferguson, McGregor. Lightweight title bout? Yeah. Let's do it. Maybe that's in order. Possibly. But like Floyd Mayweather said to Conor McGregor, before Conor McGregor loses in the cage again, how about stepping the ring against each other while they are at the peak of their earnings? Which makes sense. But if that's the case, Conor McGregor's people, Dana White and the UFC, Floyd Mayweather's people, they need to hurry up and come to an agreement then. Because if that is the case, if you're trying to hold out for a Floyd Mayweather-Conor fight so that you can earn max dollars, not having Conor McGregor now in the UFC and not defending the title, well, that's kind of an issue. Hey, we'll see how it goes, though. Here's another thing. As I said last week, you had UFC 209, and you didn't have one Diaz brothers on here? What? And now you look at it and you say, maybe we should have put one of them on here, if not both. You didn't have one of them on there. Now, maybe this could be because the Diaz brothers are pricing themselves out, possibly. Not accepting certain fights, where it is that Nick Diaz turned down a couple of fights, a fight with Woodley, fight with Bisping. Apparently he turned those down. So yeah, it I don't know. It would have been nice though if the UFC would have had one, if not both, of the Diaz brothers on the card. I know it wouldn't. It probably wouldn't have helped as much, but maybe it would have got a slight boost if they would have reached out to Nate Diaz and said, Nate, could you step in on short notice? I'm pretty sure Nate would have, but probably just couldn't make weight. Stepped in on short notice against Conor McGregor, but that's a much bigger fight than Tony Ferguson. But still in all, he steps in, beats Ferguson. He's got a legit claim to say, hey, even though I lost, even though me and McGregor are 1-1 at welterweight, at lightweight, I beat Michael Johnson. I beat Tony Ferguson. I already got a victory on McGregor. Give me my money and my title shot. Rest of the 209, like I said, wasn't that bad. The new co-main event that we had was a lightweight battle between David Tamar defeating Lando Vannatar or Vannate by unanimous decision. This was a very good fight. Both guys were going at it. Lando is a very exciting, unorthodox fighter that comes at you with different ways. He does cartwheel kicks, spinning back fists, very tough as well. He looks like Tom Hardy in the movie Bronson, shaved head, the mustache, and just coming at you. Shout out to David Timmer for going out there, putting on a very good performance, withstanding the unorthodox style of Lando and going out there and really showcasing his own skill set to say, hey, you know what? I'm out here too, partner, to show what I can do. So for both of those fighters, I think it was a very good way for them to step up and put on a good show. And going forward, I look for good things for both of these fighters. Once again, when you don't have the pressure on you to be the showstopper of an event, you can really go out there and let loose and be more relaxed to put on a better showing. So right on for both of these fighters. Very excited to see what both of them can do in the future. Dan Kelly picked up the biggest win of his career, defeating former UFC light heavyweight champion Rashad Evans, who made his UFC middleweight debut by split decision. This one, you know, for Rashad Evans, he looked very good physically as far as making the weight, cutting down. Okay. But it just, he just wasn't active enough. That this was a fight where, even though he made weight, honestly, compared to Kelly, he literally looked like it was a welterweight fight and a middleweight. They looked like they were in two completely different classes. Kelly, very strong in the upper body, very hard to take down, stuffed some good takedowns attempts by Evans. And when he did get taken down, got back up, he just stayed more active. This wasn't necessarily a fight where Evans looked old or looked like he doesn't have it anymore. It looked like this was a matchup. This kind of looked like the Chuck Liddell Keith Jardine matchup. And I know that kind of was a big eye opener to Liddell's downfall. Maybe this would be for Evans, I don't know. But it was kind of the same sense of Jardine and Kelly didn't have pressure on them to go out there and win. Everybody was expecting them to lose, so they kind of could just go out there and just say, yeah, I'm not just showing up to collect the check and give you another W. I'm actually here to make a name for myself and give myself a big win. And they just went out there and let it loose, and they did. And they both came away victorious over former champions. So it was a very good showing by Kelly, who now is on a 4-fight win streak and is actually 6-1 in the UFC. Excuse me. Yeah, 6-1 in the UFC. So, hey, you know what? It'll be interesting to see where he goes from here. He probably deserves a ranked opponent now in the middleweight division. He deserves somebody who now you can say, you know what? Let's see what you can do against better competition. Doesn't need to be in there with the top 10 guy. But if I'm looking at the middleweight division, who's to say a Tim Boach? Tim Boach just lost. He's number 15. Sam Alvey, Uriah Hall. Brunson, Brunson I know is a top 10 guy, but with the loss to Silva, he's not going to move up, but that can happen. Maybe he takes on the winner of Belfort versus Gaslam. Tyus Latis is there, so there's some intriguing matchups at the bottom half of the rankings for Dan Kelly coming up next, so I definitely think that'll be good for him going forward. For Rashad Evans, again, you know, I don't think he's done, but I definitely think he waited too long to make this move to middleweight. definitely felt that he should have made his before because he was a light or smaller light heavyweight. Hey, if they have the 185-pound division, who knows? I know Evan said for a long time he didn't make the move before because he hates cutting weight. I understand that, but as you get older and you're trying to go into a new division, especially one where you have to cut weight, that's generally not good. Look at BJ Penn thinking he's a featherweight fighter. Has not been good for him there. Yair Rodriguez and Frankie Edgar showed him, yeah, this may not be the division for you, partner. If you're an older fighter, honestly, unless you fought in the division before, it's probably best that you either stay in the division you're in or move up. So for Evans, you know, he's going to have to fight somebody that's not ranked, but he's going to have to take on somebody who's tough to see if he really can go out there and, you know, capture some of his old, quote-unquote, sugar days. Interesting enough, I said this earlier on the Lou Thomas show when I called in. I really do feel that Tyrone Woodley is the welterweight version of Rashad Evans. If you look at their body of work, and if you look at their fighting styles and their overall build and what they bring to the fight, both are collegiate wrestlers. Both have knockout power, very physically gifted athletes, very quick, strong, explosive fighters coming off. It's kind of like a defensive player. That first step is so quick. Same thing with these guys. But, they're boring fighters generally. Think about it. Think about Wood. Compare Rashad Evans and Tyrone Woodley's careers. How many fights of theirs are you really excited to have seen? Especially the big fights. Rashad Evans beat Forrest Griffin. Okay. Was it a fight a lot of people referenced back to? His fight with Rampage Jackson. Doozer. Hell, his biggest knockout over Chuck Liddell, which was a fantastic knockout, was a boring fight up until that knockout. Up until that knockout, that had been a boring fight. The first round and a half, Rashad basically ran around staying away from Chuck Liddell the whole time and actually made Chuck Liddell become the aggressor. This was how Woodley and Thompson was without the knockout. Two counter-strikers, one circling around, staying on the outside, not willing to engage, while the other reluctantly had to chase them around, try to cut the corners off. Now, Chuck Liddell, not wanting to settle for just staying on the outside and fainting like Thompson did, he did take risk and come in and got caught and put to sleep. But up until then, that was a boring fight. And anybody who says differently, they're crazy. But yeah, they're images of each other. Rashad just couldn't hold on to his title as long as Woodley had so far, because Woodley technically has defended it twice. So, yeah. Also on the card, you had Cynthia Calvillo defeating Amanda Cooper via submission, rear naked choke. Okay, guys, look, check this out. Go on to YouTube and go to Luke Thomas's YouTube channel. Check out his morning wrap-up. He does them, I believe, either every week or after every show. He gives you the pictures and a very good breakdown of what transpired here. Because it's hard for me to say it if you're just listening to the words, but this was a very good fight. But what happened was Cynthia Cooper goes in for a double leg takedown. But with the double leg, she doesn't get like a blast double leg is what they call it in wrestling, where kind of like Brock Lesnar or Roman Reigns or Goldberg, if you're a wrestling fan, where you basically spear the person, taking their legs from underneath them. She basically just did a basic double leg takedown, but in doing so, Cynthia was able to counter and wrapping her hands around Amanda's body and getting and rolling with the takedown. See, if you just get the takedown, let's say you do a blast double leg takedown. I'll try to explain it. If I do the blast double leg takedown, I go underneath and I tackle your waist, put both my hands behind your legs, and I lift your legs up slightly, and I bull rush forward to where you can't get your, you know, you can't get your bearings when you land. You're basically going to land on your butt and your lower back and I'm going to have you. And you're done. Now, you can try to roll with it, but generally you won't have the momentum on your side because I have your body locked up and you're not able to plant yourself when you land correctly, to where basically you just have to try to roll and use your leg power in rolling backwards to flip me with you. But if I'm holding your legs and I already got my momentum going forward so that when we go down, my momentum is basically going into your stomach, I'm just going to land up on top of you. But in this one, she just went for a basic double leg, which did allow Cynthia to get body control over so that when they went down, she was able to roll with it. She rolled from an anaconda to a gator roll. Yeah, how old school is that? And transpired into the back. Again, as I said, go to the Luke Thomas channel on YouTube. He explains it far better than I can, and he does it with pictures so that you can actually see what's going on. But it was a tremendous finish, and this was a finish that Cynthia says she's never even done in the gym before. This isn't something she's practiced. This isn't something that she's pulled off before, so she was confident. It was kind of just, with all my training, I'm just going with what I know and just reacting, and hey, it worked out tremendously well for Uriah Faber, retired at the end of last year. He was saying to Ariel Helwani before the fight, when they were doing a show for MMAfighting.com, Uriah was saying, hey, look out for this girl. She's going to be a beast. She's going to put on a show. She's going to gain a lot of new fans here, and she sure did. So kudos to Cynthia for going out there and putting on a tremendous victory over Amanda Cooper. Look forward to seeing what she can do in the women's strawweight division in the future. To open up the pay-per-view, we had a heavyweight matchup, which I was so much looking forward to. Alistair Overeem versus Mark Hunt, two former K-1 fighters, K-1 champion, two former Pride fighters, two men in the heavyweight division who have come up short in title fight runs, but have shown that they are two of the most vicious knockout artists in the division. And it was no different here. Mark Hunt suffered a very bad gash on his, I believe it was his right leg, his right shin. He threw a leg kick to Alistair Overeem, and he tried to throw it to Alistair's thigh. Alistair kind of checked it, and Hunt's shin hit the side of Overeem's knee, and it slid up. So it was a big gash on shin. A lot of blood was trickling down his leg. So every time he kicked, you just saw a patch of blood on Overeem's leg, body, or arm. So it was a lot going on there. But these two guys went at it fairly decent bout. You know, went to three rounds, which a lot of people did not expect. Mark Hunt had some success in the stand-up game when they were in the clinch. He was throwing these short elbows, landing on Overeem. But Alistair Overeem got a clinch, clinched Mark Hunt up against the cage, and threw one of those vicious knees that he's very well known for, some of the best knees in the game, hard Mark Hunt, right on the kisser, put Mark Hunt to sleep. When you were watching it, you heard a when the knee connected. You heard it, and, you know, I'm turning to the guys, and I'm watching the fight, when I'm like, yo, did you hear that? And then all of a sudden, you see Mark Hunt, he just starts leaning over, and you see his arms just drop. He's still standing up against the cage, but he's leaned over, and his arms just drop, and then Overeem steps back, and then Hunt just falls for face first. It almost looked like a lot of opponents that Mark Hunt is the face plant. So it's not something that you see very often, Mark Hunt getting KO'd, but Alistair Overeem did it with a tremendous knee. Once again, showing that regardless of his ups and downs, there's times where he's been inconsistent in his career. And yes, I understand there was a time where it was Overeem, you know, those vitamins from Mexico, where he just looked like a bodybuilder out there running through people. And now he looks a lot different. Abs are a little more flat, stick out a little bit more, arms in his bulky, still cut. I get it, but hey, it is what it is. But he showed, dude, I'm still one of the most versatile, feared heavyweights out here. Yes, my chin has been tested before. Yes, I can be put to sleep. Okay, fair enough. But I can also put a lot of people to sleep as well. And with this win, it's his first win since he lost to Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight championship last year at UFC 203. But now this puts him at 5-1 in his last outings, with victories over Mark Hunt, Andre Arlovski, Junior Dos Santos, Roy Nelson, and Stefan Struve. Hey, Overeem is certainly looking to say, hey, I might just need one more fight and I could get back in heavyweight title contention. Now, later this year, I believe May 11th, UFC 211, we're going to have Miocic versus Junior Dos Santos, Cowboy Stadium. If Dos Santos falls out due to injuries, you can have someone like a Derek Lewis or even Overeem step in as a late replacement. That's fine. If not, if that fight goes through, I think the UFC needs to make a heavyweight bout. Number one contenders matchup. Derek Lewis, the beast, taking on Alistair Overeem. Why not? The winner of that gets a heavyweight championship bout. That'll be awesome. Be very good to see. Overeem, you know, he's very versatile. Kicks, knees, punches. And when he's on his game, when he's able to go out there and, you know, not get content with just looking for a knockout, but actually being calculated in his attack and saying, yeah, I'm looking for a finish, but I'm not going to force it. I'm not just going to go out there recklessly, and I'm not just going to leave myself vulnerable to get countered on. I'm going to go out here, and I'm going to look for my openings, take my shots, and then I'm going to just pick you apart and then go from there. He's still very dangerous. So I'm very excited to see what Overeem does from here going forward. For Mark Hunt, you know, he was in a tough battle. He's in a tough battle with the UFC over the lawsuit after the Brock Lesnar loss that he had at UFC 200. Brock Lesnar fell in a drug test, and this is one of the several fighters that Mark Hunt has faced inside the UFC that has failed a drug test. Brock Lesnar, Frank Mir, Bigfoot Silva, also Overeem in the past, but not here. So Mark Hunt, you know, in a lawsuit with the UFC, we'll see how that goes. For him, he's 2-1-1 in his last four outings. You know, he's a guy that at one particular point in time, let me just scroll down here real quick. At one particular point in time in his career, he was 5-1 with victories over Wanderlei Silva and Mirko Krokop. Then he goes on a tremendous, and I do mean a tremendous, six-fight losing streak. One of them was a submission loss to Gegard Mousasi, who fights at middleweight now in the UFC. And also a knockout loss to Melvin Manhoff, who's a middleweight in Bellator. So, yeah. And one of those losses, though, he did lose to Fedor, Josh Barnett, and also Alistair Overeem. But ever since then, he came to the UFC in 2010, lost his first match, but then goes on a four-fight win streak. Three of them were finishes. One went to decision. That was against Ben Rothwell. Gets a number one contenders bout against Junior Dos Santos. Loses that one in a pretty contested fight. Then he gets the draw against Anderson Silva. That's the one that's Bigfoot failed the drug test. Then he knocks out Roy Nelson, something you don't really see. And then we're like, okay, you know what? All right, God, he lost to Dos Santos, but that was a close bout. He had a tremendous fight against Bigfoot Silva, but that got overturned. He just knocked out Roy Nelson. He steps in on late notice for Cain Velasquez to take on Fabricio Verdun in Mexico City for the interim heavyweight championship. Loses that one. Okay, you know what? You stepped in on late notice. We got it. Then he goes in, loses another one to Stipe Miocic, and Miocic set a UFC record for most strikes landed in a fight with over 200, whether it was a fight or whether it was a heavyweight fight. But then he goes on to beat Bigfoot Silva in a rematch. Frank Mir. Frank Mir failed the drug test. Then he loses to Brock Lesnar at UFC 200. Brock failed the drug test. And he loses here. So as you see, he's a guy that he finds consistency, whether it's good or bad, and then he's inconsistent. So what he does from here, we shall see. The UFC and him, you know, hopefully he's allowed to continue to fight. In fact, Overeem and Hunt made the biggest paydays on this card. They both cashed in at over $700,000 for the night. So, and for Mark Hunt talking about he needs to feed his family, he's certainly got a couple good meals lined up for them in the coming days after this fight here. For the rest of the card, you know, it was pretty entertaining for the most part. In the prelims, we had three stoppages, a submission, a KO, and a TKO. One of the KOs came from one of the greatest comebacks in possibly MMA UFC history. Darren Elkins coming back on Mursad Berkic came back in the third round in a fight that he was busted open and bleeding, getting beat down on. And Elkins came back and gave us one of the greatest comebacks that we've ever seen in MMA history. Please go on to YouTube, go on to UFC Fight Pass, go wherever you got to go, wherever you can, and check out that performance, Elkins' comeback on Burkett. And it was very tremendous. If you go on MMA Fighting on Instagram, there's a great picture that they have of Elkins afterwards with his corner cheering him on. I'm trying to I can't remember. Yeah, Esther Lynn, or you could check out Esther Lynn on Instagram as well. She's a tremendous photographer for MMA Fighting, and she got a tremendous shot of Elkins just expressing the joy of victory afterwards with his corner right there on top of the cage. It's a pretty cool pic. I'll be posting it here with the show link when I post this on my sports page on Facebook. That's All Things Sports, so be sure to check that out. Then you had Alicantia defeating Luke Saunders via knee bar and submission. That was only the third knee bar we've ever seen in UFC history. Knee bars, you know, they're fun to watch, but you don't see many of them. So it was very good the way that he set it up. Again, if you go on Luke Thomas's YouTube page, he explains it with pictures and breaks it down tremendously well to where you can see what exactly he's talking about and get a good explanation from there. And for the most part, guys, that was basically the card for UFC 209. Again, a decent card, not great, but a decent card. The main event, though, really put a bad taste in everyone's mouth. It was sour. It was vinegar. It was not the business. It was not something that we hope to ever see again. Hopefully, we don't get that. But, you know, with Tyrone Woodley, you never know. Steven Thompson, I kind of give him a little bit of a pass only because he's shown in the past pretty decent matchups. You look at his matchups against Johnny Hendricks, Jack Ellenberg. I believe, you know, even his loss to Matt Brown when he did lose, that was a pretty fun fight. You look at his matchup against Roy McDonald, not the bloodbath we were all hoping for, but a very good matchup nonetheless, action-packed. So when Steven Thompson shows me more inconsistent showings like he did against Woodley, that's when I'll start crediting him with being the boring fighters as well. But until then, sorry, Woodley, you kind of get stuck with that label just giving off your history. This coming weekend, we got UFC Fight Night in Brazil. Main event, Vitor Belfort taking on Kelvin Gastelum. That's going to be an interesting middleweight matchup right there. Both of these guys looking for a victory. Gastelum, the young lion, looking to move up, defeat the biggest name that he's faced so far in his short MMA career. He gets a victory here. That would definitely be great for him moving forward. For Belfort, looking to bounce back after back-to-back losses to Wyman and Jacare, and looking to maybe, who knows, but seeing if he could go on one last UFC title shot run before hanging up the gloves. In the co-main event, we got a light heavyweight showdown between Mauricio Shogun Hua taking on Gian Vellante. That's going to be an interesting matchup right there. Shogun, you know, he's kind of been on the downside of his career lately. Can he bounce back? And here's the interesting part. By MMA standards, okay, by MMA standards, he is not that damn old. Like some of these guys, like a Belfort, late 30s, early 40s, Rashad, late 30s. Mauricio is only 35 years old, but he's been in so many battles. 34 fights so far, tremendous wars that he had over in Pride and in the UFC against Dan Henderson twice. So, but yeah, he's looking to come back in his home country. Maybe he can do it. We also got Edson Barbosa on the card, Betch Guerrero coming back. Alex Alvaro taking on Tim Means. Be on the lookout for that. Kevin Lee is going to be fighting. Sergio Moraes is going to be fighting. Josh Berkman. So we got some pretty good fights coming up there. Got some pretty good fights coming up this weekend. So be sure to check that out. UFC Fight Night. I'm trying to look to see if it's going to be on Fox or what. I'm going to have to get back to you guys. I don't see any network that it's going to be on. Look, it's either going to be on Fox Sports 1 or on UFC Fight Pass. So be sure to check it out. It should be a good one there from Brazil. Also, in case you guys didn't hear about the news last week, but we had the man himself, the great George Rush St. Pierre. George St. Pierre, GSP, is back in the UFC, and he does have an opponent. He is going to be looking to make history. looking to become only the fourth UFC fighter to go and successfully claim a second title in a different division as he challenges middleweight champion Michael Bisping. Now, when that fight happens, we are not sure. It'll be later this year. A lot of people speculated that it could be in July for International Fight Week, but Georges St-Pierre has said that it won't be for International Fight Week. I guess he starts to get himself prepared physically. You know, we're putting on the weight and making sure that he's correct there. So they're not going to be fighting International Fight Week. Damn. But Georges St-Pierre, Bisping, it will be going down. They had a press conference on Thursday. Bisping was late to it. They had an MMA award show the night before. Was throwing them back some from some of the pictures and videos we've seen. He had a shouting match with Eddie Bravo. Not sure what they were going at it for. Maybe Joe Rogan on his podcast, Joe Rogan Experience, maybe he'll shed some light on it. Maybe when Eddie Bravo comes back, maybe he'll shed some light on it. Michael Bisping, who has the countdown, his weekly countdown show on SiriusXM Channel 93 Rush Thursdays from 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So that is 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Be sure to check it out. Michael Bisping, the countdown Thursdays at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Maybe he clarifies what him and Eddie Bravo was really going at it for. But those two are going to face each other. And look, let me tell you, Bisping was throwing shots at Georges St-Pierre. Obviously, George isn't the biggest trash talker. He's heard it all before, so it's not going to faze him. But Bisping was like, I don't give a damn. I'm not going to hold back, and I'm going to let it be known. And he was basically saying that he didn't like the fact that Georges St-Pierre thinks Bisping is an easier fight to come back to. George could have came back, could have took on Nick Diaz, could have took on the winner of Woodley versus Thompson, could have took on Anderson Silva. Hell, maybe could even took on Conor McGregor. But he chose to take on Michael Bisping. And Bisping, as a fighter, looks at that as disrespect, saying, you think I'm the easier fighter? Well, I'm going to show you, pal, and I'm going to kick your ass come to fight. Now, obviously, when the fight comes closer and they get the date, we'll break it down a lot more, but early thought is Bisping's probably going to win this fight unless Georges St-Pierre could get this to the ground. If not, I think Bisping's going to wear him out in the stand-up game. If you just look at Bisping's stand-up, his boxing, his footwork, his cardio, it's relentless, endless pressure. But you never know. When they faced off against each other, two things. One, the size difference wasn't as big as many of us thought. We thought it was going to be Bisping in some cases was just going to dwarf Georges St-Pierre from the height and just the body width. But when we looked at him, granted, they had on, you know, George had on a suit, Bisping had on a jacket, really couldn't tell, but it did not look like Michael Bisping was that much bigger than Georges St-Pierre. Now, granted, as far as the height, maybe George was wearing some high heels, not high heel shoes, but had some shoes on with thick heels on them. Maybe he was doing that for the face-off. I don't know, but he didn't even look that much shorter than Bisping. So this is going to be an interesting matchup between these two later on. I am hearing that Freddie Roach will be in Georges St-Pierre's corner and training him for this fight. So that should be really interesting. That, you know, it's good because Bisping is, you know, he's a kickboxer, does a lot of boxing in there, a lot of foot movement, a lot of, you know, one-twos, a lot of jabs, a lot of crosses. So it will be good for Georges St-Pierre to not only have one of the best boxing coaches out there, but also in his corner. That's going to be fun to watch. So be on the lookout for that. Also saw in the MMA world that UFC bantamweight champion Amanda Nunes says that she does not have any desire to go after the featherweight title now. She made it known before that, hey, once she defended her title against Ronda Rousey, she was looking to become a two-division champion, the first woman to do so in the UFC, and go after the featherweight championship. Now, she's saying, you know what? I think I changed my mind on that. Interesting enough, Cyborg was just cleared to come back and fight. There was no wrongdoing in her field or her flag by USADA at the end of last year. So she's been cleared. And a lot of people are speculating that, oh, it's because Amanda Nunes is scared and doesn't want to fight Cyborg. No, Amanda Nunes says, look, we're both from Brazil. I would rather that she gets the title and she becomes the champion of that division. I even said before that this division was for her and it's her champ and it's her title. So I get it. They're both from Brazil. They both want to go out there and be ladies of Brazil representing for their country. If they could just get Jessica Andrade to dethrone Joanna Jędrzejczyk later this year at UFC 211, and if Cyborg does get the title shot and she wins, could we have three women in the UFC all from Brazil holding UFC gold at the same time? That'd be fun right there. So, yeah, I do understand where Amanda's coming from. not wanting to go up against her own fellow countrywoman and Cyborg and saying, hey, she can be the champion. I'm going to focus on my division. But it is kind of ironic that everybody has an excuse on why they, for some reason, don't want to be either in the division or in a fight with Cyborg. First, it was because she's not in the UFC. Then it's, oh, well, she's not in our division. Oh, well, I don't feel like moving up to 145. Or I have injuries. Or I want to face this woman again. Or I'll give this woman a rematch. Everybody has an excuse for why they don't want to step across Kristina Cyborg. But let me tell you something. It's going to happen. Sooner or later, somebody's going to have to step across from her. And when they do, sorry for you. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes about. But, yeah, that is the news. Amanda Nunes has changed her mind on wanting to go after UFC Featherweight Gold. Now, that doesn't mean that she won't take on, Jermaine Durandamy or possibly Holly Holm if Holly Holm was to win. But I think with Cyborg, I think she'd rather that she gets a championship shot first. And then maybe if Cyborg isn't successful or somebody else gets the title, maybe Amanda will go for it then. We'll see. Also, real quick before we get off the air here, is it possible that Brock Lesnar could be coming back to MMA? There was a picture from his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach posted online. They both were having lunch. He was having lunch with Brock and Paul Heyman. Look, they could just be friends in the same area, in the same neighborhood, whatever. Said, hey, let's go get some lunch. I'm pretty sure that Brock Lesnar has his trainers that he trains with just to stay in good shape. As big as he is and the type of schedule that he has with WWE, it's not like he's on the road daily with the guys. So, you know, he wants to stay in shape. But Brock has also stated that, you know, he wanted to kind of come back into the MMA world and kind of, you know, go out there and go for another run. Unfortunately, he had the failed test with the UFC. He is cleared come this summer, but he said a couple weeks ago that he's retiring from the sports. So I don't know. But with this picture, maybe it is speculation that maybe he may want to come back to MMA, but just not with the UFC. Bellator is out there. Ryzen is out there in Japan. And he goes to Ryzen. You could best believe those vitamins from Mexico will be accepted. Green light, he goes to Bellator. I'm not saying Bellator fighters cheat. I'm not saying it at all. But maybe he can go to Bellator and do some things going forward from there. Remember, Kimbo Slice did pop out for steroids before passing away. Rest in peace, Kevin Ferguson. But he did pop hot, and so did Ken Shamrock, I believe. So it's not that these guys are just getting away with it over there. So it will be interesting to see if Brock Lesnar does decide to come back. If he does, let's say he goes to Bellator. You got Bob Lashley over there. You got Fedor over there, Matt Mitrione. So there's some matchups. If he decides to go to Ryzen, again, you could still get a Fedor matchup. Maybe you get a King Mo matchup, a Rampage matchup. So if Brock Lesnar does want to continue with a mixed martial arts career, hey, you never know. There are some options out there for him, but who knows? He's never hinted at ever wanting to do anything outside of the UFC. But like I said, with Fedor being out there now, maybe Brock says, hey, that's one of the biggest fights we need to make out there, Brock Lesnar versus Fedor. That'll be interesting. Once again, guys, thank you guys for tuning in and listening to an episode of Inside the Octagon. I am your host, Kalani Lua. Follow me on Twitter at KLua11, KLUA11. Also, follow and like my sports page on Facebook, All Things Sports. That is All Things Sports on Facebook. Be sure to like that. I'm going to post this on All Things Sports on Facebook and on my Twitter. So be sure to like, comment, and share. Let everybody know. Until next week, remember, Inside the Octagon every Monday from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So be sure to tune in. Until then, enjoy the rest of your guys' week. Have a good one. I'll talk to you guys then. Peace.